Hi, Sabrina George for New Comedy Radio in a club on a Monday afternoon after a bit of a heavy session. Talking to Earl Oakin, who is a comedy musician who... he's a musical genius and sex symbol. Very gorgeous looking man. Earl, I always start off with this question. What was the very first action you did to become a performer?
Of any sort?
Yeah.
I don't know whether this counts. Apparently in my cot, before I learned to speak, I sang an entire melody. I'm actually surprised that my parents were trying to get to sleep, and I was like 9 months old, upon which they were impressed with it and wanted an encore, and I gave them one. It showed that I was a hand from the word go. Does that count?
Yes.
Okay.
And then what happened?
And I went to sleep then. Oh, I see. By the time I was three, I'd sing in the street. I'd sing anywhere. I just wanted to sing, and I've always wanted to sing. By the time I was five, I was entertaining in old age homes with my dad playing the guitar for me. And TV by the time I was 12.
So did they give you music lessons? And
I think 10 piano lessons and then practice later. But I didn't do any other music, but I used voice as my instrument. So everything I've learned about the guitar and the piano I sort of picked up by ear over the years.
You didn't go to music college?
Oh no, I got a degree in philosophy. But I've been collecting records, 78 old records, since I was five. I got fell in love with Grand Opera, and it started there. Then I discovered jazz, and later bossa nova, and then I got involved with the pop scene in the 60s, because that's when I grew up. So it's been music
all the time. And what was your TV thing at 12 then?
It was a program called All Your Own, which the country in the rooms otherwise was not about TV. And it was a series, a very BBC series, and it was a cross between sort of Peter with Kids with Hobbies and a sort of talent show for kids, but without any hint of competition,
right.
It was all, you know, usually presented by Hugh Weldon, who was off that week, I'm quite sure why.
The one who became a heavyweight news reporter, journalist.
He was great because he'd always make himself out to be an idiot, and then so that the kid would say, no, and they put him right, and of course, in so doing, did exactly what he wanted them to. But my week, I had Brian Johnson, Jonas.
The great cricketer.
Yes, yes.
Cricket commentator, yes.
And this is 1959, so early on. It was a black and white TV. They hadn't invented zoom lenses yet. They wanted a close up. They had three lenses, and they changed one of the camera. The first one would sort of spin its lenses, and then come back with a close up lens. That's how early it was.
And why were you doing that?
I was singing with my guitar. I used to sing all the time by then. I used to do folk songs of the world, except English, pretty much. Russian ones, Italian ones, Scottish ones, anything where I like the melody. So I was listening to Paul Robeson, the Negro spirituals. So that's what I did then.
And then what, you went off to university? And then what happened? You went to university and did philosophy, and were you doing music on the side to keep you?
I carried all the way through when I was in school, gradually discovering pop music, gradually doing folk clubs, where comedy started coming into things. In the history of comedy, very rarely mentioned folk clubs. It was very, very important for people doing what became alternative comedy 10 years earlier, because it was sort of stream of consciousness of comedy. This is what I did last week, told in a funny way, or rather than gags with a punchline. And people like Billy Connolly was one of them. The guy from the Northeast, who I don't know how to call Mick Elliott, hilarious. Yeah, he got around to doing a song in the end because he rolled his sleeves up and started nattering, and everybody was involved. And in folk clubs, you were either a tradie, you know, studio folk songs from fishermen from Norfolk. Or you want an entertainer, and that included people who play ragtime guitar, people who had found old musical songs and were bringing them back, and people like me wrote their own songs and sang a bit of jazz, or perhaps wrote wrong words for famous songs. I remember the Beatles, of course, you know, rewrote songs like Ticket to Ride, which was like, I think I'm going to be sick, but on the floor, so like, you know, stuff like that. And you just did it, and then you did this great song. I mean, my thing was I always like to make people laugh, and then with the next song, make them cry.
Right.
That was to me a challenge to see whether you could go, make them go both ways. And but singing was still, always has and always will be the core of what I'm interested in.
So why didn't you go to college and do singing rather than do philosophy?
Oh, because singing in England meant, you know,
classing.
No, sorry, no. I've got Polish and Russian blood, I'm Jewish, and I listen to opera, which is all about rah. No, there's nothing about rah in English singing. It's all sort
of,
maybe you're the word. Bugger off. So, you know, it was nothing I wanted to do, you know. So, I wanted to do everything from Caruso and Shalyapin through to Billie Holiday and, you know, and the Brazilian singers. And I did not want to do this sort of awful, sort of sexless, you know. No, it didn't interest me. And I'm also probably lazy, but I'm also, I like to do things my way. And I do regret not having studied and played the piano properly, because that would be a mistake. On the other hand, if you start learning all the rules, you start playing them, and if you're going to be a songwriter, you have to break rules in order to get interesting chord sequences and all into quite interesting tunes. So maybe I'm better off the way I am.
So were you a university student when the Beatles came along and you got into that, or how did that happen that you moved into?
Oh, I'm closer than that. It's a long story. I met somebody called Manny Goldberg. I'm not making this up. He's still alive, I believe. He must be when he was 90. And if you could define what the archetypal 1950s Jewish manager was, he was it. But he happened to know a gentleman called Dick James, who he was in the army with. Dick James owned something called Northern Songs, a Beatles publishing company. He was the one who first got them on telly, and therefore, he very rarely mentioned, and therefore, that's why the Beatles got to number 14, their first single, because Brian Atchison was getting no help from EMI at all. It's very difficult to think of the Beatles as an unknown group, but they were once. And it's actually Dick James who did that, and in return, he said, I'll give you their publishing, which at the time didn't mean anything, because they were an unknown.
Because they were an unknown, yeah.
But within 3 months, checks were coming in. Anyway, he was a very big, important player with the time I met him. And he took me on there. He used to call me a second form McCartney. I said, no, I'm the first fellow here. And really nice chap. I mean, you can imagine how important he was. There.
So he was an agent publisher?
Publisher.
Right.
And he published some of my early songs.
So you were writing all your own material at that point?
Songs, straight songs.
Right.
And I made my first single at Abbey Road Studios. My second year at university in 1967. And then Dick said he wanted to start his own record label. I said, I can't. I've got another year to go. Can you go? I'm almost there. And he didn't say that, but he obviously couldn't wait 18 minutes while I was fussing about messing about with philosophy. So he found somebody else to put out the records, and he found a little bridge point.
Didn't he become Elton John or something? So what happened? Were you sort of like swept into that, or did you stay very much separate from that? The whole Beatlemania and the...
I wasn't involved in Beatlemania. I met at Bottoms Touch once, but the same social once. I never really spoke to them.
So you didn't gig with them?
No, I didn't. No, I mean, I weren't met Paul much later on. My gigs were Dick James himself. And I was not involved in the Beatles world per se. Except because Dick was involved, I recorded at Abbey Road. I remember that the shadows were coming out as I went in. And I was really upset with the record because I was given no control. I mean, what would
The Pink Floyd, yeah.
And they just had a hit with See Emily Play, and it was all psychedelic singles, and he was determined to make my stuff into a psychedelic. I'm glad when I was written. If you listen to the recording, you can hear how angry I'm saying it between my teeth. You can hear it, you know. I was scared to sort of walk out.
And why didn't you walk away from philosophy? You felt a degree was important or something. Why didn't you just focus on... Right. In philosophy. East End bloke? Or is that just your accent? He was on,
yeah. I think he got adopted by somebody else because of the war, and he suddenly got you. He'd been an all-in wrestler, he'd been a professional footballer, he'd been a plaster decorator. He'd been in the forces. I mean, he was one of those.
Classic agent material.
And he was a wonderful sound man and lighting man. And if anybody comes to New York, chip on his shoulder about anybody with a posh accent looking down on him, and it took me a while, but I gradually persuaded him to believe that it's an accent, most of them are great, and it took a third of the amount that he could do. And then we'd go on tour together, and he'd be listening to the guitars, listening to Grand Opera. No, he wouldn't believe it. Yeah, hidden depths. By some strange coincidence, he actually knew my father from 10 years earlier when he used to do football in Tooting. My father ran the Evening Institute there. And when he met my dad, he couldn't believe it was a connection. Anyway, he started getting me not just folk club gigs, but started going out on tours supporting people like Ralph Mattel, Fairport Convention, all that sort of person. And then it gradually built up to various things are doing rock tours, and by this time I was a schoolmaster, and it was very difficult to find time off during the week. But I managed to wheedle in during, I think it was Whitsun holiday. I did a tour with Van Morrison, half a tour with him, and that led in a very long roundabout way together with the tour I done with the Convention. It's a long story to unbore you with, but with various people involved, I ended up being asked to open for Wings. And I finally did meet Paul McCartney properly, and we did a two-week tour. This is in 79. And it's very strange because I would hear him backstage, say, in Glasgow, singing my songs. Now learning, because he'd heard them all week. And it's very funny hearing one of the Beatles singing my songs, which is sort of the other way around it's supposed to be. But it's sort of nice.
So what were you being sold at? Were you doing comedy stuff there, or were you just doing a complete broad spectrum?
I was, as I've always done, I was doing a little bit of comedy in that set, and my own straight songs, and a bit of jazz. So it was like, I always was, although they stopped using the term, I was a variety act. And variety sort of died. Last time we saw variety was probably Morgan Wise, and even that wasn't a classic variety. variety show, really. A variety show is a show where, I mean, there's something called Sunday Night at Nine Palladium that Bruce Forsyth used to host in the 60s and 70s. That was a variety show. And it was a top show on TV. Had a quiz game in the middle, and either side of it had a whole range of things, from comedians, jugglers, dancers, you name it, and it had a big name at the end, and that was a variety show. And the Royal Variety Show today is the nearest we've got to that, except that it's sort of out of date now. It hasn't moved with the times, and they have as major acts. They're no longer the Bob Hopes and the Danny Kays, so they have some pop group heading it, which is not right. The first one that did that was the Beatles, and they were sort of, in a way, it worked, but they were sort of the exception. And now that's what it is, and it's not. It's time for it to be revamped, the variety show. But anyway, so because there were no variety shows by then, I had to find a way of, you know, somewhere to perform. In the 70s, it was folk clubs, then they died.
Why did they die, do you think?
They'd run their course. It had been going for, it had been the big hot thing in the 60s, you know, Peter Paul and Mary and Bob Dylan, that was the whole thing, you know. And it was vaguely political too, sort of left wing, you know. The 80s were coming, and all of a sudden it became something to be made fun of if you were a hippie or a left winger.
Were you ever a hippie or a left winger?
I'm always a left winger, I've never been a hippie. People like Anara Bevan are my heroes. It's funny, it's so funny. I did, about last year, I was asked to do a weekend. They told me it was a comedy weekend, but when I got up there, it was an old folk weekend. I mean, I remember doing these years, and most of the people involved were sort of folk entertainers with some comedy. They're still around, you know. They were great. It felt like coming home, you know. And it was a Labour club, and the local constituency is called Sedgefield. Does that ring a bell?
Tony Blair, for those overseas who don't know. It's his club.
So, and I, of course, dressed in a three-piece suit, spats and cravat, and some of the people in the audience knew me, but others didn't. So I said to them at one point, I said, you know, I was a bit worried about coming here because I thought we might have political differences because I'm, and then I left a sort of gap with some of the people of the tourists, because I'm old Labour. Upon which the entire room stood up and cheered for 10 minutes, which makes you wonder what the dickens he's doing there.
Why they elected Tony Blair the new Labour?
Of all places, it's a mining village. I mean, what is he doing there? He used to be in, I don't know.
Islington.
Yes, Islington. Yes. That's where he belongs. Yes. He's a right wing. He should be in the Tory.
His token gestures towards representing your constituencies rather gone out the window.
Yes, it's. I mean, to me, socialism means stealing from the rich and giving to the poor, and not the other way around, which has happened for the last 10 years. So I have nobody to vote for. It's like, you know, the pseudo Tories or the ultra Tories. And where's the Labour Party?
So do you think the folk music scene became out of fashion, or do you think it got incorporated into mainstream, or no, why would the clubs have died?
It's a bit like flares. It's there. It's still to this day there are folk clubs. But it just became dated, and all the people that were the exciting young things were now middle-aged things, and they weren't, a lot of them were quirky. I mean, I've been able to carry on through my middle age because I'm so weird looking that I don't quite fit.
You're not dated.
No. I mean,
you're so out of date, you're not dated.
I mean, I dress like it's 1910. So, if you dress like it's 1970, that's dated, but 1910, that's just weird. You know, that's sort of acceptable. Oh, he's a nutter. Okay, we'll let him in.